My name is Stephanie Rieger. This is the first of two sessions on women and power. I want to start today by having you free associate. If you've never free associated, what you do is tell me the first thing that comes into your mind when I say the word power. Okay. Usually I get a lot of negative words. From this group, I've gotten just as many positive words, which I find really interesting. You see a lot of good in power. Being like the classes I teach, which is that you don't do exactly what I want you to do to make my point, but that's okay. I'm used to that. Somebody had a hand up in the back.
What's your list of? We came in late.
Okay, I ask people to free associate to the word power. Tell me what comes into your mind when I think of power. And you're already well on the road to seeing a lot of very positive things associated with power. Usually when I do this with an audience of all women, women tend to think of a lot of negative things associated with power. Control in a negative sense, fear, intimidation are a lot of words that I get from groups of women. The point that I want to make is that power in itself is neither good nor bad. Power in itself is neither good or bad. It's simply the capacity to influence other people. I'm getting distracted. Okay, thank you. What I want to talk about today are some possible sources of power. I want to go through these with you. This list, not a list I thought up, it's a list that comes from some people who've done work on people in organizations. One of the things I do is organizational psychology. This is a list of sources of power for people in organizations, but I think we can extrapolate to this list to people who are not in formal organizations. So I'm going to put up some sources of power, and then I want you to help me think, we can all think together, about how those apply to your personal life. So, my magic wiper here, I'm going to erase these words and put up another list. There are five main sources of power that I'm going to talk about, and just to make things complicated, I'll give you three additional ones. But the first one I want to talk about, the first two really come from personal sources. And by that I mean who you are as a person, as opposed to what your position is in an organization. The first one is what we can call referent power. This is where your ability to influence other people comes from the fact that they really admire you. They respect you. They look up to you. They identify with you. They want to be like you. Can you give me an example of somebody who has a lot of referent power? Who we all might know?
Teachers.
Okay, a teacher might. A teacher who you really like, let's say, not just any teacher, but a teacher who you really like and feel close to. Anybody else?
Parents.
Lee Iacocca. Okay, Lee Iacocca is a good example of somebody who's created a public persona that everybody looks up to, admires, respects, wants to be like, etc. Great. John F. Kennedy, maybe a very charismatic figure. The basis for referent power might be charisma or personal attractiveness. Not so much where you are in an organization or what your formal authority is. It's who you are and what you're like personally. Another thing that's a personal source of power is expert knowledge. Here, the basis of your power, your ability to get other people to do what you want them to do comes from the fact that you really know what you're talking about. You're an expert in that particular field. You have abilities, you have skills, you have talents in a certain area. I was talking to somebody just before the session began who had expert power. She's doing cross stitch. And I asked her how to do it, and she was explaining to me how she did it. And she could influence my behavior if I chose to do cross stitch, because she's an expert in that field. I would do what she told me to do if I wanted to do that. Expert power is much narrower than referent power. because it only applies to the area in which you have expertise. I may not do other things that this woman wants me to do. She may not have referent power for me, but she may have expert power in a certain area. So this is narrower. These two sources of power come from what you're like, personally. The next three I'm going to talk about come from your position in the organization. And the first one is, so let me call these positional. The first one is a nice one, power to reward people. The power to give people a raise if you're in an organization, to do nice things for them, to give them time off, to let them off dish team, give them things that they want. And the key to reward power is that you have control over something that somebody wants. Maybe it's just a compliment. Certainly we all want compliments. Or maybe it's more money. Most of us want more money too. But reward power comes from your position in an organization and your ability to give rewards. You might think of a family as an organization, and there are lots of people who have reward power in your family. Maybe parents have a lot of reward power over children and over each other. Closely related to that, but the other side of the coin, is coercive power. Coercive power, and that's the power to punish. You get people to do what you want them to do, because if they don't do it, they're going to be in big trouble. Whatever the punishment is, it has to be viewed negatively by the people who are being punished. Otherwise, it won't work. If I tell my son that if he's using one of our lunches. I don't know if that's fair to the cooks. It's the punishment he would get. please don't let that out of the room. That could be in trouble. Many other meals I liked a lot, but a few that stuck in my mind. Okay, it has to be something that somebody doesn't want to do in order to be coercive power. The punishment has to be viewed negatively. Can you help me think of an example of coercive power?
They will not be promoted.
Okay, they will not be promoted, which is the other side of reward power. They will be promoted if they do something good. Coercive power might be even stronger than that. They'll get a cut in salary. Okay, they'll get something taken away that they like, which would be even more of a punishment. The last form of power is legitimate authority. Put simply, people do what you tell them to do because you are the boss. Legitimate authority. That power comes from your position in the hierarchy. I had an interesting illustration of this many years ago now. Now it's many years ago. When I started teaching, I teach at Lake Forest College, which is a small private liberal arts college in outside of Chicago. When I first started teaching, I dressed very casually. I had long hair. Sometimes I even dressed fairly close to the way I dress now. And faculty at that college are allowed to order books for the library. Faculty can walk into the library and say, I want you to order these books and these books and these books to put on the shelf in the psychology department. And I went in one day and I started to do that. And the librarian sort of looked at me like, who are you? And then I said, I'm Stephanie Rieger. I'm in the psychology department here. And she got very angry at me because I was exercising my legitimate authority to order books, but she didn't know that I was the person in authority. So I had confused things for her. I had the right to order those books. But it wasn't clear to her from some of the other signals I was sending out, which was looking like a slightly aging graduate student, or even undergraduate, I had confused her. But people will do what you say when you're a person who has legitimate authority. I remember when I first started teaching, One day, to my astonishment, my students got out notebooks and started writing down what I was saying, and I thought, oh my goodness, what's going on here? Because at the time, when I first started teaching, I wasn't used to legitimate authority. I wasn't used to having that ability to influence people. I think that I'm not unusual in that lots of women have trouble accepting the authority they have and really finding the limits of that authority. They tend to define their authority as much narrower than it may be. So that's something that I hope you share your experiences about with me. These are the biggies. These are the major sources of power. There's a few others I'll mention real quickly. One is information power. Suppose you have access to information and knowledge that is of value to other people. Suppose you're the only person who knows how to use the computer. You've got a lot of power over other people because you have information that they want. Another form of power is connection power. This isn't what you know, this is who you know. You remember the old Groucho Marx show, there was always a secret word. You said the secret word and a duck would come down from the ceiling, pay you $25. Remember that? The secret word today is network, right? Networking. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about connection power. Used to be called old boy network. Now we're having some old girl networks. A person's links with important and influential people in the organization. The last one is resource power. And these are certainly a bit overlapping here, but they're pointing to different things. The person who controls the gold makes the rules. It's true in organizations. The person who controls the money makes the rules. Whatever the key resource is in your organization, that person's going to have a lot of power. These sources of power are not completely separate. They overlap a lot. But let me just leave you with this initial list. I want you to do some thinking now about these sources of power and how they connect with your own life. So, as I had asked you to for a couple of days now, I want you to sit back for a minute, close your eyes if that helps you think, look at this list if that helps you think, and I want you to identify the sources of power that you use the most. I'm going to ask you three questions. Which ones do you use the most in your own life? That's the first question. The second question is, which sources of power are you most comfortable with? And you know what the third question is. Which sources of power are you least comfortable with? Are you really uncomfortable with?
Could you read through the list one more time? It's hard for me.
Sure. First one is referent power. Other people do what you say because they really look up to you and admire you and respect you. Expert power, they do what you say because you really know what you're talking about. You have a lot of expertise. Reward power, they do what you say because you can give them lots of positive things, money or compliments or praise or approval or whatever. Coercive power, the other side of that, they do what you say because you're going to punish them if they don't. Legitimate authority, because you're in a position that gives you the right to tell them what to do. Information power, you have information other people might want. Connection power, you know powerful people. And resource power, you have control over certain resources.
Questions you want to ask anybody again?
First question is, which sources of power operate the most in your life? Which ones are you most comfortable with, and which ones are you least comfortable with?
I'm a school teacher. the one that I use most, I suppose, is grading power reward. The one that I find most flattering is occasionally a student thinks I'm an expert. And the one that I use least of all, that I'm most uncomfortable with, is coercive grading examination. A very distasteful, judgmental process that I detest.
Mm-hmm. It's so that's the hardest one.
That's the hardest.
I think something that's fascinating to me is that I have power in a lot of those places that I have no, I would never have thought that I have power in almost any of those things in thinking about it. But when I look at the list, people, I have credibility. So mine falls mostly into personal. And I have, I'm in a position where I have some expertise. And I'm least comfortable in the positional.
In
reward, coercion, authority. I would prefer not to have to ever do any of that stuff if I could choose not to.
Do other people feel that same way? Let's talk about that. Why is that? Why do you think that is for you?
First of all, I don't think my position is particularly respected. I would like to think that people do things because to get their own reward rather than because I can reward them for what they, what you would hope they would want to do, just out of being in harmony with God. I feel horrible when I have to coerce. That's a last ditch thing.
I'm a pastor and I feel uncomfortable with this legitimate authority one. I feel that if I make something of my legitimate authority, it becomes rather coercive.
So you think there's a blur between those two, and that's how it feels to you. You might want to check out whether that's how it feels to other people. Because it may, they may not perceive you as being coercive. Do you use mostly the punishments that you have access to?
No.
Okay. But you're afraid of using a lot of your legitimate authority because you don't want to be seen that way. Is that fair to say?
I guess as a teacher, I feel more, I feel comfortable seeing other people like a pastor or, you know, other teachers or principal as legitimate authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And yet not as comfortable with that for myself.
Mm-hmm. What is it about it that you're uncomfortable with?
I don't know. I guess I still don't accept it. Well, like you were saying, not seeing yourself as the authority, not being used to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess it's still just being a little bit uncomfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
I do one of those things that most people just kind of cringe. I substitute for junior and senior high. And I'm comfortable with legitimate authority. I come in and I set the stage. I give them my credentials. I, this is why you can look up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel I have to do that.
Sure.
But I guess there's one authority beyond me that I trust in, and that's the teacher that I'm replacing. That they have to respect me because they have to respect that person. And where I have difficulties when they don't.
The interesting thing I think about legitimate authority is that it is something given to you by other people. The people over, the teenagers who you're working with, give you that legitimate authority. And they can also take away that legitimate authority from you, too.
I think that you have to claim legitimate authority, because when I was a young teacher, I felt like legitimate authority was coercive, and I felt bad about using it.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've been able, in fact, through talking with you, since I've been able to separate myself from, emotionally, from feeling like I'm being mean or coercive or inappropriate somehow, and just sort of neutralize the whole thing. And legitimate authority is when your papers are due, your papers are due. You know, I didn't say next week, I said Friday, I meant Friday. But it's not emotional anymore. Look, since I have claimed legitimate authority as a teacher, as I've gotten older, I've been more comfortable with that. And I just, it's real nice to neutralize the negative affect. I don't have to say to my students, you're bad people, or I'm a bad person. I'm just saying this is what it is.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important step, and it sounds like that's something that you're working towards, to separating that out. it's important to be clear in your own mind and be comfortable with the legitimate authority. Otherwise, I always think that when I was first teaching, I must have sent out some sort of smell that people picked up that said, I'm nervous, I don't really know what I'm doing, I'm afraid I'm not confident, etc. And I don't think I really deserve this legitimate authority. The group took it away from me, like the teenagers would take it away from me. Fortunately, after one semester of that nonsense. But tell me a little bit, Ingrid, about what you meant when you said separating the affect, what that meant for you.
I just didn't feel, I felt early on as a teacher that I was a sucker for anybody coming up and saying, oh, come on, be a hip, nice, cool teacher, and let me take an incomplete or not do my work, or... You know, I'm a good person, so what does it matter whether I've written a good exam? Or, but I quickly learned that no one learned that way, and that it was frustrating and horrible for me. And at some point, I sort of neutralized my feelings about requiring work of my students or requiring certain kinds of behavior of my students, and just said, This is what's going on here. I'm a teacher of students, and just because you're college students that I like and enjoy as people doesn't mean that you don't have to do the work for me. And it doesn't mean I'm a bad person that I ask you to do the work for me.
So you felt guilty at first about asking them to do things.
I think that was really complicated. And as soon as I didn't have to feel that there was anything either bad or good about it, it just is, then I didn't have to, I think I communicated that to them. Too, that this was a very neutral thing. This is just the work between us that had to get done. It's the same thing with my secretary. I ask her to do work, I expect her to do it. But I don't have any bad feelings or negative feelings about it. It's just the stuff that goes on between us every day. It's sort of ordinary, regular stuff. It's not loaded with emotion.
Let's talk about that a little more, because I think that's a really important part. Do other people resonate to this? Have you had experiences? Would you say some more about them?
I work with young children, and when I first started teaching, I was overwhelmed when I talked with parents that they assumed that I knew what I was doing. And what I tried not to show is how afraid I was. And they were older than I was, so I assumed that because they were older and had more experience in this world in general, that they brought a world of experience that I did not have at that time. And I've taught over 20 years now, and that doesn't worry me anymore. And I'm comfortable with legitimate authority.
What did you let go of in that process? Is there something that you let go of, that you stopped thinking about the stuff bothering you?
I don't know. I think one of the things that was passed on to me, well, not passed on, I claimed it, but it was something I wasn't aware of. An older person came to me and said, you are my spiritual leader. I'm a pastor, and I didn't know if I was ready for that mantle to be placed on top of me.
Me?
Yeah, that's right. Who me? Why me? And I think once I had taken time to examine some of that, I think one of the things that I let go of was the fear of some of the consequences that may arise from me using that legitimate authority in that sense. I can live with the consequences of the actions that my legitimate authority allows me to perform and to do. And I can live with that. And so I let go of that fear of what are people going to say and think. Okay. Not that I hope I don't misuse it, but I'm not looking over my shoulder all the time.
Which makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. I just realized that I went through the same thing with housekeepers, that I felt guilty about asking someone else to do my housework. And, I was a puffer and fuss, and I would ask them about their personal problems and listen all day, and it was ruining my life, and it wasn't getting the house clean. And then at some point, I began to respect the housekeeper's ability to keep house. and respect the secretary's ability to be a professional secretary, and respect my students' ability to be good students. And so at the same time as I was claiming authority, I was respecting their thing to do their thing. You know, so I could separate me from them and say they do their thing, I do mine.
I would suggest, I'm going to get to it in a minute, but I would suggest that's particularly hard for women to do. And I think that part of it for women is the desire to be liked, to get approval, to want everybody out there to like you, to be nice, to be good, to be generous, do your own housework. How dare you ask anybody else to do the maintenance work for you, whether the secretary does or whatever. But part of what I let go of when I started teaching after I had this disastrous first semester when I said, this is your class as much as mine, what is it you want to do? And people just sort of said, oh, we don't want to have exams and we don't want to write paper. I knew deep inside me that didn't help me with, I wasn't really believing what I was saying. I let go of wanting to be liked by all of them all of the time. And I think that's hard for women to let go of, for lots of reasons.
Yes, I was going to say that wanting to be liked was something that I had to let go of in 10 years at my job before I feel that I have legitimate authority. I'm the director of volunteer services at a couple of hospitals, and started out with 200 people, and now I have 1,500. At first, my boss sort of tolerated me, you know, and I felt like I was not, I had a title of director, but I wasn't like the other directors of the hospital. I wasn't in charge of medical services and things that were really legitimate. And now by sheer sticking with it and giving up the feeling that everybody had to like me all the way along, and that I had something to offer to them that was really important to the survival of the hospitals in this day and age, mm-hmm. made me feel like I do have a little problem with networking with them, because I still feel in the one down position. I'm still kind of working on it. Okay.
And you're not a doctor, is that right?
No, I'm not a doctor.
You're not a doctor working in a medical hierarchy.
Yes.
The hardest hierarchy to crack. These are very big. I can share my personal prejudices with you on hierarchy and status and position. So the fact that you've stuck with it as long as you have, and you've gotten authority and power and are willing to use it, is a real testimony to you. Other people's experiences with power and discomfort with being powerful? I heard some other people shaking their heads.
I want to just comment a little more on this legitimate authority and my not being comfortable with pushing that part of it. Mm-hmm. Among pastors, there's the model of a pastor of being Herr Pastor. It's an old concept. He's the boss. He's the one that what he says goes. Boy, you better believe it. And I don't see that as a particularly desirable pastoral model. Mm-hmm. In fact, just the opposite. I know young pastors that have come out of the seminary that feel pretty strongly about, well, I finished the seminary and I'm ordained, and by golly, I've got authority like everything. Mm-hmm. And they find themselves up against stone walls. Because the congregation doesn't really respect that authority they seem to think they have. I feel that the authority that I have has to be something that is, it's earned. It's something that I'm respected as a person, and I'm respected as someone who's a competent pastor. And as far as calling that I'm ordained, I went to the seminary, and I've been a pastor for so many years, I deserve respect because of that. I don't see that.
So you're talking about a different model than the traditional model of being a leader.
I think that though we have a hard time understanding what the legitimate authority is, and I think that in the place of a pastor, legitimate authority is what's granted to you by the state or Canada, the province or something, that you bury, you marry, you counsel, you teach confirmation. But then what authority you work out in your position probably comes more from personal, more expertise, yeah. And people will respect you by your expertise and your reference and power.
So you can claim, if you're in a position here, you can claim lots of these sources of power, which you may not recognize that you have. I was impressed by what somebody said earlier when she was looking over this list and thought, gee, I really have many more sources of power. I wonder if other people thought that too.
When we have talked about the first one, the reference, the way I think I have the most problem with that, and maybe as women, sometimes you don't even expect that kind of power, especially beautiful. I have a lot of trouble with that, just accepting. To me, that puts a person in the spotlight, the center of attention, if they have that kind of charisma. People are wired for different reasons. That's very hard for me to accept when people do give me those kinds of strokes.
Why do you think that is?
It's just hard to believe, I think, in a lot of ways. And I was raised to, I was put down a lot for wanting to be a center of attention, so I accepted that. But on the other hand, I really want to be liked, so it's a constant struggle.
So you don't see yourself the way other people see you? Maybe other people see you very positively as somebody they identify with. I know, the one thing I know about you is that you write beautiful poetry. I hope I'm not sharing a very intimate secret, but I've heard that in a session on writing. And that's something I really admire and respect, and I admire anybody who can write beautiful, who can write poetry, much less beautiful poetry. Well, I like to get feministic.
Were you referring to the three examples which were given here in the group or to other examples?
I was talking about this gentleman, yeah. The gentleman in the back, and the gentleman from the law school.
Okay, yeah, no, then I understand. Because they were all not businessmen, and if you go out into the business world, people are much less sensitive to dealing with other people and use their authority in much different ways.
I wonder whether sometimes the brushes that we have with authority, though, isn't because the person in authority is uncomfortable. You know, they make us uncomfortable because they're uncomfortable. They use their power poorly.
Maybe so. Could be they're using coercive power when you could use reward power and get people to do what you want them to do in a more positive way. Reward them for what you want them to do instead of punishing them for what they don't want to do. I'm sort of thinking about both of these things, about whether women have, would you agree, and if so, what are special problems that women have with power, with being powerful, with accepting legitimate authority?
Lack of experience. Mm-hmm. But that comes with time and grade and over a long period of time. I'm doing better than my mother, mm-hmm. and hopefully my daughter will do better than I have done. Mm-hmm. But I don't expect to see any dramatic change in either of us.
In terms of?
In terms of power and being able to use it and being an authority in our own right. But I think that if we could stand back and look at my grandmother and my mother and myself and my daughter and perhaps her daughter, that we would see a big change. But those things happen very slowly, and and we don't always see it happening to ourselves. I've changed in the 25 years I've been in the workforce, and I think for the positive in a number of ways.
Can you give me a specific example?
Well, I am doing better now hiring and firing people and delegating authority. I still do it very poorly. I'm not comfortable with that kind of power that you have over people. But I do better at it now than I did 25 years ago. For a variety of reasons. You grow up a lot in 25 years. Mm-hmm. You mature.
Mm-hmm. Have other people had the experience of having to fire somebody? Is that what you were thinking of? You had your hand up.
I was just thinking that this is a little aside that I think as women grow up, mm-hmm. girls become men or something like that, that the emphasis has been on serving, on pleasing others, on making life comfortable for others, and that so you don't want to ruffle feathers and this kind of thing. So I think that makes it more difficult.
So firing somebody is the ultimate ruffling of feathers. That may be the hardest thing to do.
That's been difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that I tried to find out why it was difficult asking the kinds of questions that we're being encouraged to ask. It's because mostly it's been women, and it tends to be personalized, like, why don't you like me? And we didn't keep it away from the personal because thinking that it's the job, mm-hmm. not the personality. Or have you considered going into another field when you have these kinds of skills which are suited for something else and not for this? Mm-hmm. But it's the personalization of the firing from that makes it difficult in the dealing with the personal thing when it's really not a personal issue.
So it's the people take it as if you're saying you're no good, and
that's
not
right.
just like, not just your work is no good. Yeah, that's why I had a lot of trouble grading papers when I first started teaching, because my students would think I'm saying they are a failure. Somebody had failure up as one of our power words, when in fact I was saying this paper is no good, which is different from yourself is no good. So it's hard to sort those things out.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we as women tend to see power as something that's negative rather than a positive to it.
How do you see it?
I think that now I see it as something more positive for me,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't always see it.
You used to see it negatively, and now you see it how?
I think I can use it in a more constructive way, as was mentioned before, as an indictment against a person,
mm-hmm.
but within their role, things are not going adequately.
And what
with children, for example, parents in dealing with parents, if their child is not doing well in school, parents generally take what I have to say about their child as an indictment against themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be handled delicately, mm-hmm. so that they don't feel that way, or we try not to make them feel that way and make a statement about the things that are contributing to the problem,
mm-hmm.
the events, rather than the child as a person.
Mm-hmm. So that's a way of talking that lets people hear what you're saying. Uh-huh.
I'm going to get really personal. My husband and I had quite a few problems. I was a minister's wife for 20 years, and then my children were out of the nest, and I decided to go back into the world of work. While he was a pastor, I felt like it was my role to always make sure that what he did came first, and whatever he needed came first. And it was like I donated to him everything that I donated to the church. It was the same thing. And then I got to a place where I thought, well, now I have talents. It's time for me to start fulfilling them. And our balance of power, our balance changed. And we had a really rough time for a while. I think our marriage is better than ever. And I think it was really tough for him, for me to bring home same kind of money that he did when we're talking about those kinds of things. He was really rough, and I felt guilty. I thought, gee, maybe I'm neglecting him. Maybe I'm neglecting other components that always had to come first. And I had a lot of trouble with guilt.
Mm-hmm. But you put it in the past tense.
It feels good now. We're at a really good place.
Uh-huh. So eventually it worked out very positively.
Yeah.
That's not at all uncommon. In families where the woman has stayed home for a long time and chooses to go back to work. Partly it's money, because as somebody recognized early on, money is power. Women who work tend to have more power in making decisions in the family than women who don't work, although that's not always the case. But also because your roles were changing in other ways. Probably you were not doing certain things you had been doing before, and you were doing certain things that you had been doing. So in a marriage, one of the points I was trying to make yesterday in talking about anger is that people get into certain patterns. And you and your husband may have had a certain power pattern. And when you shifted to, let's say your power pattern was like this, with him being more powerful, when you shifted so that you were a person in the world like this, he's going to have to shift too. And that can cause a lot of stress and anxiety and difficulty. But you're giving us a happy ending, so it's nice to hear.
After divorce, we remarried.
Okay, divorced from each other and then remarried. That's an interesting story. Okay.
I'm in a position that doesn't have power. Mm-hmm. I have a boss that's basically incompetent. it's recognized by our whole department. It's an advertising department. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a position that I'm not going to advance because I'm hired for what I can do as an artist. And it took a couple of years with the new boss to decide that I am going to please myself and not that person, because my job wasn't dependent on pleasing him. I needed to do quality work, mm-hmm. and that was for the company. And it took a while to be able to say, this is my reward, is mm-hmm. doing it the best I can and not letting down. And other people in our office, the same thing, because nobody, the only reward you get is a raise in pay. There's no place to change your position. So it's coming to terms, and I know a lot more people that are in that position are coming to terms with where they are instead of becoming part of the power structure.
I would disagree with something you said at the beginning, which is that you're in a position that has no power. I don't think of power as something of which there are fixed amounts. I think it's possible to create power. Sometimes it's harder than other times to create power, but you can see, if you look at these, you can create referent power for yourself. You can create expert power for yourself, and it sounds a little bit like that's what you're doing. You're getting very good at your job and rewarding yourself. You can reward people, even if it be with praise. Sometimes the most powerful people in organizations are not necessarily the people with legitimate authority. So you can create power. So maybe there are degrees of power. Certainly nice to have a legitimate authority position where you have lots of power, but you may not be as powerless as you think you are. There may be ways of creating power or recognizing the power that you have, as somebody said at the beginning. Uh-huh.
I was thinking too of the power position in the family. And I think when children are young, you have sort of a legitimate authority power because you are mother and father, you know. But then children get to a certain age, gradually all along the way, you know, and especially I think in their transitional ages where they really question that legitimate power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, it can be really quite a conflict. I know I see myself going into using coercive power, probably more than, you know, reward power, but I think all in that positional thing, it's, and that fluctuation, I don't think that's an easy thing either.
Mm-hmm. And look at the problem with children within a family. You just made me think of the power struggle when there are several children in the family. This is very helpful. See what that's all about. Mm-hmm. The oldest and the middle one and the youngest and that struggle for some power.
Mm-hmm. You might ideally think of with kids when they're little, you have legitimate authority. As you grow up, they take that legitimate authority away from you. I hear when they're teenagers. Yeah. My son, of course, is never going to do that, but different story. But you might think of your relationship with them becoming more and more based on referent power. They like you. You're a nice person to hang around with. We're all grown-ups in here. We don't have to go to our parents for material rewards anymore, but we can get other kinds of rewards from them. The relationship can be based more on sources of power, like referent power or expertise or rewards, and not simply legitimate authority, because at some point they're going to take that away. We have time for about one more comment.
A moment ago you said maybe you were meaning quite what you said, that it is nice to have a lot of power. And I'm not so sure about that. We've got lots of expressions like "How easy lies the head that wears the crown," and Lord Axton's famous "All power corrupts absolute power corrupts absolutely."
Mm-hmm.
If I may be personal for a moment too, there have been twice in my life when I felt very uncomfortable with the power. Once Congress and the President of the United States announced that I was an officer of the captain before I was a man. And I suddenly found myself in a position where just raw rank power had to be exercised simply by legitimation. And in a bomber, in an aircraft, you don't talk it over with the gunner and the bombardier. What they want to do, you tell them. The other time was when the Board of Regents and the President of the University announced that I was now a dean. A dean is a well-known rat, obviously. It's hard to say to a person, you've been with us a year or two, but your scholarship is inadequate. That's my judgment. And writing is no good. And your public service is worthless. Get out. Those are very uncomfortable positions, and I think the discomfort in my own instance was this fear of real corruption. Hmm. It does something to your whole point system to think that I'm being forced to make judgments that are not constructive to this person, that are destructive to everybody in sight, in order to preserve sort of a job which, and how enthusiastic you are about bombing people in the first place, and how you feel about the nature of the institution that you're trying to run as a team. Mm-hmm. And those are very discomforting, at least they were for me, kinds of powers based on legitimation by outside strength, mm-hmm. and not based upon mutual respect and conversation.
I think those things are very difficult, and I appreciate that. Where I'm coming from when I say it'd be nice, we all want to have more power, is thinking about women in organizations. And I'm going to say this in a flippant way, but I really mean it quite seriously. I would like to have the opportunity to be corrupted by power. I would like more women to have the opportunity to play out those roles and think about power, which is not to say that power is always being in a positive situation. I think the examples you've given are poignant ones and moving ones of the difficulties of being in power.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if we as women don't often pass up chances to give each other strokes when we do come into positions of power and do gain more personal power. I think in my case, sometimes I find myself kind of withdrawing from that, questioning a little. Is it okay for that person to have that kind of power, or to take that kind of power? Well, is she letting something else slide? Or, you know, just making judgments that are very unfamous, very traditional. I question if maybe we don't support each other enough as women, mm-hmm. as we see each other gain more strides and threads of power.
Let's continue that in the next discussion, which we're going to have, I believe, Saturday at 4 on being powerful. We'll talk some more about what it's like being powerful from the inside, as some of the examples you've given us, and also looking at people who are powerful. For those of you who are going to come to that session, think about the experience, the situations that you're in where you feel really powerful and what those situations are like, and the situations that you're in where you feel really powerless and what those situations are like. And we'll talk about that.